Welcome to Days in the Wild. I just want to talk to you real quick before we jump into this next episode. I can't urge you enough to get out there and give us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. It's super important. Helps me keep this free, helps me reach new people and continue to grow. If you don't know how to do that, hit me up and I'll help you through it. Also want you to go and give Phoenix Shooting Bags a look. Check out their website, phoenixshootingbags.com. They are our main sponsor and they put an excellent product out, and it means a lot for me for you to go check them out and take a look and see what they got. So without further ado, let's roll into this next episode. 4 months of it, 4 or 5 years.
Why?
Well, I was stuck in Argentina for 3 weeks.
Oh, you went on a hunt, huh?
Yeah, I was hunting red stag, which
you
of all people who like hunting elk would love hunting red stag. It's
Was it their rut?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, oh, they call really? they call it the roar. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I knew they did. I've heard of them and read some stories and whatnot. And they look, you know, they're very similar to elk, of course. But
oh yeah.
But they're still different. You know,
oh, yeah.
I mean, they're not the same thing.
No. And,
I mean, we know that, but. But yeah, no, everything's been good. So you guys been avoiding the virus and everything's been cool, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We've managed to stay corona free.
Well, that's good though. I mean, you know, you and your family, that's great.
Yeah, no, it's good. Business is okay. It's, you know, not what it would normally be, but we're surviving. So that's all that matters. So
yeah. And here in Idaho, I mean, it's like, it's whatever. I don't know. I don't think people even care. They're driving. There's as many people on the road now as there. At first, there wasn't for the first week. And then all of a sudden, everybody was like, bullshit with this. We're going to do what we want. And that's what I assume, because the roads are just full of people now.
I mean, I've seen a little bit more now. Like, I don't know, you go to freaking Home Depot and there's like a bazillion people there.
I know, I go there.
I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, yeah, I go there like 2-3 times a week.
Yeah.
Because my wife and I, you know, we do a mobile home one a year. We take one, we find really reasonable, and we rip it completely apart and redo them. And then we sell it. And we do that. We do everything ourselves. We don't hire anybody. And so we're always in and out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting parts and pieces. As a matter of fact, I put one up for sale on Saturday and I sold it yesterday, so it went that quick. But we really do a nice job. I mean, everything's just brand new in it. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts. So they go good. That was our sixth one we've done. Like I say, we do like one a year. It takes me about 3 months to go through one.
Nice.
Yeah, but we have fun. I'm retired, you know, so between the elk stuff and that, we just kind of fill in, you know, so I don't, you know, you're retired and there's just, I'm not like you. I won't go to Argentina. I won't go anywhere and hunt. I just could care less about sheep, goats, anything. All I care about is elk. That's it. I won't hunt nothing else. No deer, no nothing. Nope. Don't hunt a thing. And I think. When I was younger, it was different. I'll be 65 on Sunday. And so things have changed in about the last 5 or 6 years, you know. Mm-hmm. Changed meaning, I don't even give a crap. I have people everywhere asking me to do a seminar, and I won't do them anymore. I'm done with them. I'll do podcasts, but I won't. The only seminar I'll ever do is in the state of Idaho. If I want to go do something, I'll do it. But that's it. I won't go anywhere.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I get it, man. Listen, and you're not to – whatever, but I'm 20 years younger than you, and I'm already at that point. Like I don't.
No, you're not. You have no idea.
I do not. How many times I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go there. I don't want to do this. I mean, to go hunting, no. I still want to go I still want to go everywhere. But I'm talking about the sportsman shows and all that stuff.
I used to do tons of those.
Yeah, man. I got so I've been burnt out on that stuff for almost 10 years already now.
Yeah,
like, you know,
we had a good run, you know, we did really good when we had Elk Net Doors, you know, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody. It was just us. There was nobody sharing all this information. And now you got other guys kind of going in, and that's great. You know, don't get me wrong. No problem. I mean, you got Corey and you got Jason, and they're all friends of mine. Jeez, you saw Jason and I, we did a webinar together. I mean, we're friends. I mean, we talk and we this and that. And, you know, I'm glad those younger guys are jumping in there and doing stuff. I mean, we're still totally different. My not my viewpoint, but how I'm trying to attract every bull. And see, they don't do that. And you know why they don't do it? Because I didn't do it when I was their age. I didn't do that. Yeah. I'm seriously. But as I got older, I'm realizing that I can call more than one out of eight or nine bulls. You know, I should be able to call seven out of eight to nine. And that's the way it is. And you're going to see in time, they are going to see that. I know they are. They're going to see how the elk are evolving toward calling, toward anything, just so much more hunting pressure than there was 20, 25 years ago.
It's just completely different.
Oh, we used to walk out there and just say anything, screaming, bugles, cow calls, and elk everywhere. It's not like that anymore. And so mostly for me, it's hunting pressure. It has nothing to do with wolves and all that crap.
No, it's
way more people.
It's hunting pressure and more savvy hunters. I mean, you know how I like a good example I like to equate to this whole what you're talking about right now is the Hoochie Mama. I remember when the Hoochie Mama first came out, you could literally squeeze on that thing anywhere, and elk would be like, oh, it's time. Yeah. You know, they come running in, basically, you know.
It's they like, get educated, you know.
And then now it's like you use a Hoochie Mama and they'll run the other direction.
You know, it all depends on your style. I can take a Hoochie Mama out there and call elk. I've done it. I mean, in this pressured stuff. And people, you know, they're having more difficulty calling elk and dealing with it. And so you see them go deeper and deeper. And the reason they do that is it's not for the experience. John, they go out there because they're looking for dumb elk. That's what they're doing. And a dumb elk, what I mean by a dumb elk, and don't get me wrong, it means a dumb elk is one who sees few to no hunters. Mm-hmm. And so they're more susceptible to the calling. And they are dumb. I've hunted them too. I mean, you get out here and over the counter and you get into areas where they just don't see people. And oh my God, you just make a couple calls and here they come. And that's what guys are doing. And you can see it on the videos. I can watch a video. I don't care who has it out. And I can tell by their calling strategy and how the bull reacts if they're hunting a dumb elk or if they know their stuff and perseverance and not giving up is what sucked that bull in. And, you know, I can see that. I can read between the lines. And they will, too, when they're 65 years old because they've been there, done that for so many years. You start to see the style and the type of elk that these guys are hunting or the country they're hunting. And it's no big deal. It's just that you start figuring it out. And I can watch one video and I can immediately tell you what kind of caller he is. If someone said he killed a bull and it was on a certain time, he doesn't even have to tell me what he did. I could tell you if he killed him with bull sounds or cow calls. That's how in depth you can start getting by just hearing a little piece of the story, the time of year, the time of day that he did it. I mean, I can tell you if he was in the bedding area, he's in the feeding area, without them even having any idea where they killed that elk and why they killed it. You know, and that's when you start really picking things apart and learning because you know when things went right, you know when they went wrong, and you know why. There is no question in your mind. It's nothing of this, well, they didn't want to cooperate or they didn't want to play today. Bull crap. It's much more than that. And you know, that's elk hunting. It's all so much fun, but I'm an evaluator. I mean, I dissect every little thing in an encounter because it's just my life. It's my passion. Right. And that's the animal that for some reason my brain has focused on. I don't know why, but it has. But there's a lot of guys out there and they're fun to be around.
It's a good animal to get
addicted to.
Addicted to, yeah, for sure. So what I want to do today with you is give you a scenario that hunters have been faced with, and I'm sure you've been faced with many, many times.
Just be specific with it.
Yeah, I'll try to be as specific
as
possible.
Not too general, like it could cover five different, you know, things, but I mean, that's all.
And then what I want to do is have you give me a story that
if I have
fits.
One, okay.
if you have one. I'm sure you do, that fits that scenario and how you handled it, basically. All right.
I mean, that's fair enough.
All right, here we go. So, well, you know, I started the recording. Thank God.
Because
we got into a bunch of we started talking and we were talking about relevant stuff. So,
well, you know how to edit.
Yeah, I don't think I'm even gonna edit this out. So we're just gonna guys. If you haven't recognized Paul's voice, that's Paul Modell and the Elk Nut. We are we're gonna do a little. You know, you just heard what I'm gonna say. We're gonna do a little. You know, scenario playing, and we're going to do a little, what would Paul do? That's what we're going to do. We're going to make a little bracelet.
It doesn't mean it's right. He's just saying, what would Paul do? That's what he's referring to.
The WWPD. All right. So welcome to the show, guys. Days in the Wild, sponsored by Feeding Shooting Bags. So here's my first scenario for you.
Man, right into it. All right.
Yep. You ready? It's early season. It's hot. The moon is full. You're not really hearing any bugles during the day, but you're hearing them going off at night.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think. You're in a heavily, but moderately pressured area. You know, it's prime time season normally. What do you do?
Well, what do you mean by early season, though? So let's identify.
I say early season to me means rut. It's not a late season, though. So.
Oh, okay. Dates.
Yeah. So I'm going to say the first week of September, first, second week of September.
Okay. I mean, okay, so that, you know, because that makes a difference. At least for me, it makes a difference. My early season is like anything before the 6th or 7th of September. And, you know, every year is a little bit different. I've had them screaming August the 30th. But is it the norm? No. But it can happen, you know. And so anytime between the 6th and 7th and prior to that, yeah, that's early season for us as well. And, you know, we call as much then.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm going to give you a date. It's September 12th.
Oh, my goodness. That's peak rut, man.
You know what? I mean.
Okay, that's fine. But that's a.
For us here in Arizona, it's not. It gets better towards the end of the month.
Well, you just said moderately hunted. That's not Arizona. I mean, I hunt over the counter. So most of the stuff that I'm dealing with every year, I hunt over the counter. And I'm hunting areas that have from severe pressure to moderate. It doesn't get no pressure. There's none of that. Mm-hmm. And because it's over the counter. And so most of it, and moderate would mean probably most guys don't hunt during the week because they, you know, they have jobs. So it does minimize weekend warriors, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes a Monday, but anything after that, you kind of have, there's a little more solitude out there. But, you know, even September the 12th, I mean, most of the bulls that we kill every year are already dead by the 12th. They're already bugling. And, right. and early season, you know, these days, these years, probably the last 10 years especially, when a bull's given one or two bugles, I mean, you know, generally speaking, he's in trouble. That's all we need to hear. We don't need competing bulls. We don't need hot cows. We don't need bulls, multiple bulls screaming everywhere. Nowadays, it's just a matter of hearing that bull. And on those early season bulls, from the dates you're giving me,
I'm gonna change my
yeah,
date.
Yeah, if you were specific to an actual encounter, maybe you were in, or somebody.
I mean, I've had this encounter many times in the first couple of days of elk hunting here, but I've also been in Colorado the first week of September. So I'm gonna give you my Colorado. Matter of fact, this is exactly what happened to us in Colorado. It was hot. There was a full moon. It was, I think, the 5th or the 6th of September. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would hear them like in the dark. Matter of fact, I started going out late at night and early in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and throwing out bugles and following bugles and closing the distance. That's the only way I made some opportunity. That's how I almost killed my bull. Actually, I didn't end up killing him, but that was a camera issue and I didn't shoot. But so I'd like to hear. Yeah, I'm giving you what I did, but I don't want to hear what I did.
And it sounds like you did good. You know, yeah. So you know, a camera issue. So what? But the shot opportunity was there, and most hunters, yards. That's what they're looking for. Yeah, look at that top pin. Most guys are just looking for encounters, and maybe guys like you and I were looking for, you know, bulls, but not everybody is. So we have to recognize that when we're, you know, sharing information like this, that it could cover a realm of things. It's not just mature bull. It can be anything in there. But when you're talking stuff like that, man, I mean, you know me, John. I mean, I do everything I can to read a bull, to read his emotion. And so that's what I'm targeting. So when I have full moon times, that's my favorite time to hunt. Really? I will take a full, okay. Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me?
I'm the opposite. I hate the freaking full moon.
That's because you're not a caller. When I say a caller, I mean understanding it in detail. This is when we kill them all. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to knock you, but I mean, it is huge. I mean, we all used to be like that. But as you gain more depth and more knowledge and understanding, that I don't care if it's September 1st or September 31st, all you have to do is hear a bugle. That's it. That's it. You don't need 50 bulls. I just want one. I'm not that guy that says, oh, if I'm not seeing 100 elk in a season, oh my gosh, are you kidding? I mean, I would be in heaven. I mean, I just need to hear something. I don't need to see anything. I just want one. And when he's bugling, I already know it ain't a spike. You know, it's usually at least a 5 or 6 point. You're hunting over the counter. Unless you were more specific to some draw thing and it's a herd bulls only. And that's not what we're talking about here. Is I'm trying to take advantage of that one bull. And I'm going to give you an example here in an actual story that took place. This was, I believe, September the 1st or 2nd. You know, sometimes the dates aren't spot on, so I know it's in there. And it's a 1st or 2nd. This isn't a full moon, but it was kind of a rainy time. And I'm just giving you an example about the sounds. And because this could happen at any time, it could be quiet elk, rainy elk, full moon, it could be anything. But this is really early season. We're talking really early, well before the 12. And then I can give you some full moon ones too. But in this particular one, just to give you an example, my son and I were heading up the mountain. We had pulled in because we don't hunt out of camp. We have a base. We drive away every morning, every evening. We don't bivy hunt. So we're heading up. We're heading up and we hear a bull bugle after we'd been maybe a quarter mile up the mountain. And we park in areas most people won't. There's no trail. There's no dirt road. There's nothing there. Our dirt road is where we drove in on, but there's no access point. So we're heading straight up the mountain and we love hunting steep stuff and we go up as much as possible, more than down from the top down. We'll hunt either way. But in this day we were going up because my favorite way to call bulls, John, is I bring them down to me. I'll take coming down to me other than above me or to my left or my right on the same elevation. I like that too, but bringing them down, number one, by a mile, not even close to as many bulls as we've killed. So that's what we try to shoot for when all possible. So we head up the hill, bull bugles. We never set a sound. Move up, it's really steep. It's taken us 25, 30 minutes to get up to where we think he is. And he bugles probably another 7 or 8 times. So see, I'm reading them. I'm reading what's going on. Okay, so I mean, I could ask all kinds of guys. Okay, what would you do in that situation? Why is that bull doing that? What would you do? How would you handle it? What's your best odds of getting a close encounter? You know, and most guys probably would have challenged them. From if you watch all the videos and stuff, that's what most guys do. They throw some cow calls out, try to challenge, blah blah blah. But I understood what this bull was doing. This bull was advertising himself. And how do I know that? Because nothing else was answering him. Nothing. He was calling just every maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes he would bugle. And he never moved. So I knew he was advertising. He was not location bugling. A location bugling bull will move. He's on the move in search of, as he calls. This bull was holding position and trying to draw animals to him. So why would I bugle that bull? He's not looking for a bull. He's looking for cows. He's trying to build his harem. Mm-hmm. And so as I got closer and closer, we could probably get 150 or so yards from him. Couldn't get much closer. It was just thicker than heck, and he was going to hear everything. And I hadn't said anything yet, so I decided I'm going to give him what he wants. He wants cows. And so we started to cow call the bull. Well, it worked for about 4 or 5 minutes. The bull ended up coming to maybe 100, and he just stood there. He would not budge. And we can't see him. I know he's a decent bull. I can tell by his sound that he was probably a 6 point, and he would not budge. He expected that cow to come up to him as he asked her to. He was calling. He was chuckling. He was doing everything to pull that cow to him. So what I ended up doing, and we're talking very early in the season, is I ended up backtracking. I left my son there. Like I said, it was my son and I. Now, I've done this by myself too, but in this case, I left my son right there where I called, and I just started retreating, and I called with my cow calling, and just started meandering, not straight back, just meandering, cracking, like I lost interest in him totally, but I'm calling the entire time. After I got about roughly 80, 100 yards, I heard my son shoot, bull crashes, running everywhere, and I walk back up there to see what's going on. See, now, if I was by myself, what I generally do is I will call like that, but I will move fairly rapid because I want to run back to the first spot I called from and before he gets there, hoping he gets there. And right. That's what I do, and I come back. Well, in this case, my son was there, and so that bull pull came right in, and Paul shot him under 20 yards. He was walking to the spot I first started cow calling. And I know what he was doing. He was trying to come in to scent check it, that spot. And it was a cow he was looking for. So I didn't bugle that bull, but it was early season, and that's how we ended up killing that bull. So it doesn't matter if it was a full moon or if it was raining or if it was early season. The point is I read the bull's attitude, his mindset, and then reacted according to what he was looking for. And that's the key right there.
Right. No, for sure. So the one caveat to that is he was bugling, though. So what I was saying is there's no bugles during the day. So did you just heard him bugling in the early morning before the sun came up, and then he continued to bugle.
Yeah, and it was periodic, you know. And again, we never called to him. I let him sound off on his own, and we let the bull call us to him instead of us trying to call him to us, and until it came to the point that we couldn't get any closer.
Gotcha. Do you have any scenarios that you could share with us where, again, they're not bugling at all? As soon as those, you know, first 15 minutes of light, they're done. They're just shut off.
Probably almost 90% of the bulls we kill.
Okay.
So, by mile. That's our forte, man.
I know where you're going to go with this one.
This is what we look for. We look for that bull that bugles once or twice. And don't get me wrong, we love the guys that are screaming and they're herded up and they got hot cows. And those bulls just come in. They come in fast. You get close, you get inside their comfort zone because the hot cows are there. And it's just like watching videos, you know. That's how they're going to react, because, you know, when push comes to shove and you're that close, they know they can't get their cows gathered up and get out of there. So they're going to defend. And so it's things like that. But once you start dealing with the breeding sequence and you start dealing with the slow play, you have to, first of all, understand how one works over the other. When you say a breeding sequence and then you say a slow play sequence, which has some breeding type stuff in it, how do you say, what's the difference between the two? Or when would you use one over the other? Those are the tips right there. Those are the ones that put animals on the ground when you start understanding how one works better than the other under certain situations. And, you know, in the full moon time, though, I mean, you were kind of touched on that. I mean, kind of going different directions there. But on the full moon time, it's once you hear a bull at night, like what you're doing it. And these days, what I try to do, John, is I like going out about an hour before daylight starts. So if I'm having issues like 1 or 2 days and I'm not finding elk, they're there somewhere, but I'm a runner and gunner. I'm not setting up doing blind or cold calling. I'm calling. And right. I'm using a variety of locator type sounds to get them to engage. But sometimes you just hit those times when they just won't say anything. That's just the way it is. Then we will call at night, whether it's a full moon or whatever. And once we get them at night, meaning an hour before dark, before light, and an hour after light, once we locate a bull, then We read him. We read, are there multiple bulls bugling? Is he by himself? How is he reacting to our sound? Is he being defensive or he's not? And that's how we're going to play him. A defensive bull, I don't need to run up there and slow play that bull. No, why would I do that? It's pointless. It's not really, it's going to give me the best odds. You see, and so that's what I'm looking at, is I'm reading the bull's emotion, and the emotion is what's sending the message. Whether he's challenging, whether he's just giving you an old Lonesome Charlie sound, you know, is he just chuckling? I mean, you're listening to everything. If he's, you know, defensive is the ones we look for. We like those the best because they're the biggest bulls. Most defensive bulls are your larger bull in that little area. So, I mean, you know, those are the things that we try to entertain those thoughts in our mind before we react to the situation.
Gotcha. I had a question in there, but I didn't want to interrupt you. I need to learn how to write things down when things pop up in my head. It's escaped my brain already. Well, it's 7 p.m. Well, it's 6:30 for me, and 7:30 for you. But I don't know. My brain after 5 o'clock.
Well, let me give a little tip that I like doing on full moon hunts, because we kill so many of them. You know, we had one year not very long ago where we killed 3 bulls in 6 days, all 6 points. One was 6x7 with traditional gear. Okay. And all of them were full moon. We killed them between the 6th and the 10th, all 3 bulls, all over the counter. And it was the full moon the entire time. Because you know how full moon is.
Right.
You have a full moon, you got like 5 days before, 5 days after. And it's really bright out there at those times. And what we would do is we would locate these bulls before it got daylight. And we still do it today. But at that particular time, we would locate before daylight and then try to read what the situation was. And then we would dial in, you know, a tactic that was going to fit that bull. And all 3 were different. Mm-hmm. And that's how elk are. You know, they're flesh and blood. They have different wants and needs and different things that excite them or their curiosity level. So by reading what they want, that's the key right there. And all these are pretty close shots. I mean, you know, you got to be right on top of these things. But the key to the whole thing is catching them before it gets light. Sometimes we catch them, you know, and that hour or 40 minutes before light. And so we shadow them. We grab our gear, we grab our bows, and we get up there. We don't say anything because a lot of times they're still moving a little bit. Some bulls will start moving well before daylight to their bedding area with their cows. Some stay right there. Some will stay there 40 minutes after daylight. You know, they're all a little different. So we get up there and we shadow those elk and we will follow them. And we don't, you know, with a full moon, you'd be surprised, you know, I'm sure you know, but I mean, you can see pretty good out there. With all the tons of downfall, we don't hunt sagebrush. We're not hunting open country. No, this is all very tight, heavy, heavy timber. A 40-yard shot is a good deal. That's how thick it is. So all we're trying to do is stay within hearing distance of them, and then we're evaluating anything else we hear in addition to that from another bull. Maybe that bull's just talking to his cows as they're moving or whatever the case may be. And by the time he gets daylight, we have a pretty good handle on what's going on and what it's going to take to suck that bull right into us. And when we killed those 3 bulls, we got on 3 bulls and we killed all 3 of them and on different days. But it wasn't like, okay, we ended up messing around with 6 other bulls that didn't make it happen. We killed all 3 of those. That one, we called in a couple days, boom. That's the only bull we got on, called him in. Next thing you know, another day or two, we finally got on another bull and we called that bull in. So, I mean, that's how we do it. And that's the biggest thing about calling elk is for us is why bump elk? Because you only want to throw 1 or 2 different tactics at them. And anything outside of that, you don't know what to do or how you would do it to be successful. So then you walk another 1.5 or 2 miles trying to find another elk and hope he plays. Well, if he don't play, you go again. Me, I would rather walk that 1 mile and do everything I need to do to convince him with believable sounds that he needs to come over to me, because very rare can, you know, I just sneak around and stalk to him. It's way too noisy, way too much downfall and crap. So usually you're trying to bring them into you, or if I can get a bull to respond to a cow call to the point where he's calling me to him, then a lot of times that's what I'll do. And we've talked about that before. I'll go right at him.
Right.
And so it all depends on the situation and the presentation that's necessary during that encounter to make it happen. Give me the best odds of tossing an arrow.
Awesome. All right, cool. I'm going to move on to my next scenario for you. It's rainy. It's windy. So your calls aren't really carrying very long ways, and you haven't heard a bugle all day. Mm-hmm. So you haven't heard one all morning long, and now you're, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon already. What are you doing?
Well, if it's raining pretty good, I'm going back to camp.
No, it's rainy. It's
okay,
like,
if it's off and
rain.
On.
Yep.
Okay, those are my favorite times. That's one of my absolute favorite times to be in the elk woods. I love the off and on rains, drizzly, maybe a thunderstorm. Yeah, you have your rain gear with you. Sometimes you have it on off. It's, and we kill a lot of bulls like that. As a matter of fact, I there's so many stories on that. Because, rainy times is, man, when it starts raining, as long as we know it's not going to be a downpour all day long. And it's that's the forecast, 100%. And it is going to rain cats and dogs out. You can't even follow a blood trail with that, So we usually won't even go out at that time. But from what you're describing there,
yep.
Oh, my goodness. We have killed so many bulls because there's something about when it starts to rain like that, especially if we've had a lot of hot weather, and then all of a sudden we start getting the rain, that transition in the weather pattern is just absolute money. It is absolute money. The bulls are going to start to bugle. Whether there's hot cows or not, they just get anxious. It's just like a horse rearing up everywhere and running because it's foggy and drizzly. And they're just, they're feeling their oats. A lot of times bulls will do that too. They just start talking. And it's not competitive like there's hot cows. They just talk. And that's all you really try to get out of them at that time. And when they start feeling that, man, you can do a lot of different scenarios to call them in. And that's just the biggest thing about it is by being able to engage in a tactic that is going to play on their curiosity. And usually at that time, it's a slow play all the way. The only time I would go to a breeding sequence is when I really feel it's a satellite bull. Satellite bulls a lot of times aren't alone. Even though you may hear him, there's a lot of times he's with others, but they're not saying much. One might, three might not. And so I go straight to a breeding sequence. So a breeding sequence means I'm going through a sequence of sounds. I'm using multiple cows and one small bull. That's my breeding sequence. And I can get pretty persistent with it and exciting and try to suck them over. Very rare do I do it if I think a bull has cows or if he's a herd bull. I usually will use the slow play for that bull. It doesn't mean one won't work over the other at all. It's just I've noticed that I get him to come faster. If I got a bull and he's got six cows, but he's not saying nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, I know he has no hot cow, but does he want a cow that's hot? Way more than a satellite does. That's why he's got him. He's waiting for him to come into heat. So when I got that bull like that, and I saw something go into the timber, or even if he gave one bugle a half a mile away, and he won't respond to nothing else. But I know he's got cows. I can just tell by what he is that if I really feel in my gut he does, just, when you call in a lot of bulls, and we've called over 1,000 to bow range, you get a good idea of what a bull generally is. Yeah, I'm wrong once in a while, but maybe 2 out of 100. Seriously, I can usually feel real quick what he is. And I'm going to slow play that bull because he's got cows, and he'll leave them to come for a hot one. Oh, yeah, nothing else is going to bother those cows. But I can't pull him out of there if he has a hot cow with the slow play. He's not going to do it. So, see, that's how I'm evaluating things and trying to direct my calling towards a bull that I feel this will work for him. And that's why I have these various tactics of whether I'm going to do cold calling, advertising bugles, breeding sequence, slow play, full send, meaning herd bull, hot cow, four other bulls messing with them, pestering the crap, trying to call the cow away. You see, so I have to pick the right tactic if I want the herd bull. I can't use satellite tactic and expect to get him. You just can't. It would be just a bonus if he ever came to you. Usually it's a satellite that would show up first. So this is the kind of things that go through our head, and It's the same as if you got a good bull and you got three or four satellites and they're so dang close. You remember you asked me that question about a year ago or so, and I finally got in touch with you and you said you had already killed a really nice bull, so we didn't even talk about it. But I got to thinking about that more and more on some of the stuff that we've done, of calling our way to a bull and moving others out of the way, but the herd bull won't move. And you know, those are some of the things that we end up doing. And there's just so many little things that a person, that a hunter can use that will be so versatile that he can actually, you know, attract elk, whether he has to go to them or they come to him under any given situation. And that's why I really don't put a lot of stock in. As at early bulls, any quiet bulls, the full moon bull. I mean, my tactics really don't change. What I'm reading is the bull, because you can have some pretty active bulls, John, in early season, rainy season, full moon season. But in the full moon, the reason we kill so many bulls during the full moon, and it excites us, is especially when the full moon falls about the eighth on, because the full moon means at that time that you're starting to get cows coming into estrus, and estrus will trump the full moon all day long. That's just all there. That's how it is. But once we hit that 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and the full moon hits at those times, I would do quit my job to be out there, because I'm going to hear them at night and I'm going to hear what's going on. And my at night, meaning whether it's the middle of the night or an hour before daylight or whatever, I hear them. I can tell what they're saying, what they're talking about, what their feeling is, what's happening. And that's what I'm going to play on. I'm not going to run out there and just throw some cow calls and bugles out there, because that's all I know. I mean, what hunter do you know, elk hunter, archery elk hunter, do you know that doesn't know how to cow call and bugle? I mean, really, there is none. They all know how to do it. But yet the kill rate is less than 10% for over the counter. Why? Why is it that it's usually 7.5 to 10, depending on the unit you're at, and over 90% will not kill, but they know how to cow call and bugle? Because it doesn't mean squat. They're
Yeah,
not
I mean,
communicating with the elk, John. They're
if you're,
just making elk sounds.
yeah, you're just saying,
They're not saying anything. They're just,
you're speaking, yeah,
that's what they're doing.
you're just saying words but not speaking sentences, basically.
Well, you're not communicating.
Right.
It's like me and you talking. If we weren't using sentences and words that we both understood, that's just making sounds. We're not communicating. But when elk start using sounds, and they're using it through emotion or their tone of their voice, you know, it's the same thing as when I've asked guys at seminars and stuff. Will a bull, a herd bull or any bull, will he use a challenging bugle or challenging tone toward a cow? Well, of course he will. And they're just like shocked. You know why? Because it's us that put those name tags on them. The elk don't realize what a challenge is or a lip ball. They don't know what all that. You know what it is? It's nothing but a sign of emotion from them for what they're presented with at that time. If you're cow calling a bull and he just starts screaming, and so you guys are 80 yards apart and you keep cow calling and cow, and he keeps upping up the ante with his sound out of frustration, annoyance, whatever, because you're not coming, he will give you a challenging tone. Absolutely. The same challenge as he would at another bull. The same as if you yelled at your wife because you were pissed, as you would yell at a coworker, a guy. You don't change anything. You're still yelling because you're mad about the situation at hand. You see, you don't have a different kind of a yelling for one over the other. No, you're mad. This is how elk are. And guys don't get that. They think because we throw these names on them that it only applies to bull. Oh, this only applies to cows. No, it's the same as a lip ball. A lip ball is a sign of emotion. It's ultimate emotion when a bull can be aggravated, annoyed, ticked for whatever is at present. It could be toward a cow, it could be toward a bull. It doesn't make any difference. So it's emotion, and that's what I'm reading when I'm out there. So if I get a response to a bugle and a bull gives me a lip ball right off the bat, it can represent a couple of things. First of all, maybe he's been hassled there for, you know, who knows how long with other bulls, and I just walk up and I hear him do that. And most of the time, he's already been pushed over the edge by something. It wasn't just me being there, but we don't know that. It's just we show up and we throw out a sound, and he's all, you know, the emotion he's given is off the top of the charts. So you play on that, or maybe it's the opposite, and it's real low, and he just kind of gives you, and that's it, nothing else. You know, you play on that. That's what you're listening for. You're going to give them the same tactic for both those sounds? Go ahead. And you're going to see that you're going to lose battle after battle after battle because you're using the same thing until you finally find the bull where it fits. Well, don't do that. Be willing to adapt and adjust your thinking and before you speak to him or her or whatever elk you're dealing with, and it will go a long ways. You'll start seeing that you start communicating instead of just making elk sounds to them.
Right. I'm actually going to skip this next one. There's a guy sent over this, but I think we kind of covered it a little bit.
But I have a lot of rainy day bull kills.
Yeah.
I wrote down.
Go ahead and shit. You want to share one of your rainy day stories with us? Or?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I have a whole bunch of them written here because I knew you had mentioned that you didn't, you know, nothing real specific other than rainy. How about this or how about that? And so I wrote a couple notes down, you know, of something that might pertain to that. And yeah, no, there's one in particular. And again, my son, you know, because we always hunt together. Well, I shouldn't say always. We either hunt together or we hunt alone. We're not hunting with other, unless we invited somebody or something happened like that. But we're not hunting in groups. Some people think that we're hunting in 3 to 5 groups all every time we go out. No, it's just either me by myself, my son by himself, or me and him, unless we have some special thing happening. But outside of that, no, that's, I mean, 90-something% of the time, that's how we're out there. But a lot of times it is with him because we try to put our times together so that will work out because we enjoy, you know, each other's company. But on this particular bull, it was raining. Paul hates to go out when it's raining. He just hates it. He really doesn't like it. I don't care if it's sprinkling. He just doesn't like it. He has so much confidence that he's going to kill one anyway. Why should he have to go out when it's raining? He'd rather go when it's better weather. If it's cold, that's great. But he's that way. He's always been that way, even since he was a little kid. But I always, oh, no, this could be the day. You know, we're going to go out. I just like being out there. Right. And most of the time when I say rain, it's what you described earlier. It's just rainy, you know, then off and on. I mean, things are wet. And I think one of the worst things about it is we hunt so much brush country. And so it can rain and not rain, or it rained overnight. And it's just like if you were walking through it and was on downpour. Yeah.
You're getting wet no matter what.
Oh, yeah. You're putting the rain gear on. And it slows you down. It's noisy. And not that we really care about those things, but it's still another thing to deal with. And it's just the way it is. And so we were moving through and I told him, we're going to go. Come on, you got to do this. So I have to talk him into it. It's not like I'm telling him he's going to go. I'm trying to talk him into it. We're going to hit an area that we've done good in before. Let's just try this, you know. So we do. We go in this one area and we knew there was a bull over there. We had heard him previously, other days. And if you get into some of these little really isolated pockets, not even a half mile off the road, it's just really isolated. It's out of nowhere. And most guys just don't even pay attention to him because they look for access stuff. And we had heard this bull. We knew he was over there. Or he should still be there. We hoped he was. And we got in there. And we probably went up, I would say, roughly a half a mile. And it was rainy off and on. It's slick. Speed sticks everywhere. And, you know, nothing's really happening. There's no sound. And he's a little bit annoyed. And I'm like, you know, I'm always hopeful. There's got to be. I know there's something over here. So we finally get up to a spot where there's a big old rock. And we sit there and wait. And I tell him, yeah, maybe we'll all do some calling right here. Let's just see if we can wake something up. Well, I pulled the bugle out and I'm getting ready to bugle. And we hear a bull bugle. And I look, I said, that's got to be him. He's way off. We're not where he is exactly. You know, it's not like he was 100 yards away. And I said, there's a bull right there. I said, let's go get that bull. And so, of course, you know, anybody who hears a bugle out there, you kind of you forget about it, your little aches and pains and the boredom and whatever. I mean, this is something that's, you know, could be good. So we move over in his direction. We get, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred yards. In the meantime, he bugled one more time as we're moving over to him. It takes about 15 minutes to get in a position to where the wind should be right where we're going to pull him. Because most every bull we pull in, when we call, they come straight at us. We rarely ever have a bull coming downwind. I mean, this just doesn't happen. I mean, I could count on my hand how many bulls came in on the last 100 that we called. They come right at us. And maybe sometimes they got to come a little left or right, come getting around an obstacle. But the wind is the last thing they could care about. So being believable is real important here. And I believe that most people fail in this area, and that's why they have so many elk coming downwind. And you see it all over the internet. People giving seminars. Most elk will come in downwind. Elk come in downwind, in my opinion, John, because they're suspicious. Something right. happened. Whether it was a sighting or your sounds were just way off the chart, or they saw some little flicker of movement that didn't look like an elk as they got closer. Something happens that raises that red flag of doubt. So I try to eliminate that by picking tight setups or don't do any calling until I know I am safe. There is no way that if they're not where I think they are, they still can't see me. And so I'm very careful on that. And so we kind of set up. And I started going through, because I've done this for years now, I started going through a slow play. It took me about 10 to 15 minutes of talking mm-hmm. to this cow without ever raising my voice like I was talking to that bull. Just letting him know something had moved into his area. And finally, after one of the cow calls I gave, he immediately tried to call her to him. And he just kind of did it. You know how a bull will just give a short little squeal. And the minute he did it, I kind of just gave him a growl through my bugle with my voice. And I usually kind of go, and just to let him know, hey, stay back. That's it. No read, no nothing. That's mm-hmm. how I usually will do it. And it's letting him know to stay back. Well, he ain't going to stay back, you know. And so I went, I go back through my little sequence. And the minute I give a cow call again, bam, this time I call him with the cow call, and that's exactly what I did. I used the sound that a cow will make as she's asking that bull to come over here. Well, I don't like that. I'm the bull with her. I don't want that. And right. as soon as I try to ask that bull to come on over, he hammers it immediately. You build his excitement. And when he does, I raise the ante with my bugle now. I'm putting a little more emotion behind it. Still a lot of room. I'm not challenging him yet with everything I got, just a little bit. And this is one of those days where it was raining off and on, off and on. And again, almost 15 minutes goes by. This bull never says a sound. How many guys would have stayed there making some sounds and went after 10 minutes, he must have ran off or he's gone or whatever and left. That's mm-hmm. what people do on over-the-counter pressured bulls. And so just showing you have to be persistent sometimes and be confident that as you start using these sounds, and the important thing is understanding to use the right sound. Now, what if I would have just been using some social cow talk, you know, waiting at first? It wouldn't have been squat. But the minute I started going through the bull showing his defensive action, or not defensive action, but his excitement for the cow, by using the panting and just a little one or two glunks, and he's raking and he's pawing the ground, and you hear him kind of make moans, he kind of goes, just little stuff. Remember, he's talking to her. He's not talking to the world. He's not talking to the bull. He's just feeling his excitement for this treasure he has, right? And so I went through that. I'm just going real slow. And as soon as after I do that a little bit, I always like to give a couple cow sounds, more of a, you know, and just plant the seed. She's still right there. He's still displaying for her. And boy, once you do that, after that second or third burst of cow sounds, the bull can't help it. And he'll usually just kind of give you a, and he's trying to call the cow over to him. And so the minute he does it, that's when I try to call him. And see, when a cow is now asking that bull to come on over, she'll go, she drops her note, gets a little more volume to it other than just a, which is social, whether mingling around, dinging as they're moving around. Totally different emotion or cadence behind that sound. That bull knows what it means. He knows exactly what it means. And once I built that little rapport between the cow and him, he now gets more excited because she's asking him to come over. And when she does, things start to elevate. I get a little more excitement, a little more emotion behind my bugle. Time to stay back, go through my little sequence. I keep going. Now I got him bugling regularly. I took a bull that was doing nothing for almost 12, 15 minutes. And by the time he comes in to die, he probably will bugle at least 30 times, at least Oh, yeah. You just get him going unglued. And I mean, you are hammering, working him. And you're still going through your little sequence and just hammering every time he was just staying. Next thing you know, here he comes. And those are the things that excite me the most. I love seeing those things go from nothing to off the charts, you know, just full send bugles. And instead of saying, I walk in on a bull and giving him everything I got right off the bat, and here he comes running. Well, those are fun, but it happens so quick. These, it just shows you that you can be so believable that it just, they get in this trance, and here they come. And I mean, they come right at you. And to kill bulls like that, and I ended up bringing that bull. He came, as a matter of fact, my son ended up moving about 15 yards on that bull. I could see the willows moving as I'm calling, but I don't see the bull. And all of a sudden, I can see the bull coming around to my right. Not below me, but just coming right around to my right. And Paul's up to the left, and I saw him draw. Bull stopped probably, I don't know, you know, 20 something yards, not very far. He didn't even know he was there, and he drilled and he killed that bull right there. And so, you know, I got him to get out there, even though it was getting rainy and crappy, and we both had rain suits when it happened. Good things can happen like that. And I don't know if that same thing would have happened and that bull would have been that active if it had been a really hot September the 3rd. That's about what it was. It was a real early season one. But right. That little bit of rainy stuff, you know, and the bull ended up sounding off. I didn't get him going myself. He just made a noise. And I could tell he wasn't rutting. So in other words, I could tell he didn't have a hot cow. There was nothing answering him. He wasn't advertising himself to any degree. It was like a bugle. Nothing. Kind of a lazy, lethargic bed bugle. So I thought, okay. And he sounded good, though. And I thought, okay, this is a pretty decent bull. This is no little raghorn. And that's why I decided to go with a slow play over a breeding sequence. A breeding sequence is multiple cows, one bull. A slow play is one cow and one bull. And as a breeding sequence goes on, you rarely get a bull to respond, hardly at all. They just come in silent. The slow play, it usually gets them to engage. Once you go through it and you use that cow sound, rarely do they ever give their first bugle on the bugle, just or the, any bull sound, whether I'm panting, you know, I mean, feeling it because he's so excited about the situation he's in with that cow, hardly ever. It's the cow sound. And that is how I generally think and to start building upon that building block right there and get him to commit. And again, these things apply. It doesn't matter what the weather is. It just happened to be a rainy day. But, I mean, it can be, you know, early season. And we could call that a quiet bull. He only bugled the one time until we started going toward him. And then he bugled a second time. But he did this on his own. But it was so far apart. It wasn't like he was advertising himself. It was more like he was yawning. It wasn't even a full bugle by any means, and it wasn't very loud. It was just like he was just right there, and you had to be close enough to hear him. You know, it's things like that that hunters go through every year, and they wonder, how do I handle a bull like that that just isn't saying hardly anything? And now what if I would have sat there and cow called a bunch, and that's it? You see, why would he come over to me? You know, because he heard a cow? In its early season, most of the time they couldn't even care less about it. But what I did was I planted the seed by using defensive action once he said something, and I was making the sounds. We've talked about it before, but I was making the sounds that a bull will use when a cow is coming into estrus in his presence. And guys have to understand how important that is to bulls. It's so important because that means he's smelling it. You see, he's smelling the pheromone that she's emitting. This is huge, guys. You have to convince yourself that this is a very powerful fragrance that these bulls are all waiting for. Mm-hmm. And when you convince them, you have one right there. And I don't use it on a bull with a hot cow. He's not going to leave what he has, the real McCoy, there to come to you. I use it on a bull who I feel is a herd bull quality, and satellites will come in too. But I'm usually looking for the herd bull, you know. But if I know he has cows because I saw them, or I just know the area and that bull usually has them in there and he's not saying much, I know I can get him to leave the cows. It's just like that. Remember that story I told you where Paul killed the one with the longbow? Yeah. You know, and I called him in twice. I knew that bull had cows. There was no doubt in my mind he had cows. And it was the slow play that we sucked him in and ended up taking him. But you see, it's those kind of things. If you get in there and think you're just going to start screaming and challenging and throw a few cow sounds and they're going to come running to you, It's not going to happen. They're going to leave. And it took me a lot of years to figure this out, because I want to always be that guy too, to be really aggressive and aggressive. And I am aggressive caller, but I pick my spots and I wait and be subtle until I can build up to use that aggressive action. And then it's just everything you can muster up. And it's so exciting that when you do it bull after bull after bull, instead of me going 5 miles that day, I'm only going 1 mile, because I'm going to make it happen with this guy. You are going to get him to engage unless you just flat do something wrong, but you will get him to engage. And that's the exciting part, is to see this stuff come together and work on bull after bull after bull after bull. And it's just really fun to do on over the counter elk.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always feel like that much more accomplished when you get them to do exactly what you want, you know, and you know it's because what you did.
That's a good point.
As opposed to, you know, just being in the right situation, you know what I'm saying? Or
instead of just being
lucky. Yeah, exactly.
You knew why it worked.
Yeah.
No, that's that. Oh yeah, that is so good, because that's how a guy starts building his confidence. And this is what the problem is with most elk hunters today. They're afraid to use sounds, and especially when they get right there next to elk, because their past experience has showed that most elk run from them or leave the area or shut up and don't do anything. And what they're not realizing is it's them. They're the problem. It's not the elk, not the problem. It's them. And it's their lack of communication, even though they can make elk sounds really well. It's their lack of the communication with the bull of setting the table. But they want everything to happen really fast, because they watch the videos and they want everything to happen within, you know, 90 seconds or a couple of minutes. And a lot of these bulls that aren't in that frame of mind of aggression, it's not going to happen. You're either going to shut them up or they're going to run off because they know something's not quite right. But right. But it's a lot of fun, you know, to dealing with that bull. And we had a bull this year that I located him about an hour before daylight. I believe it was a Wednesday night, and I was taking another guy hunting, and he wasn't there yet. And so I was out driving dirt roads, going by camp after camp. I mean, they're everywhere on over the counter hunts. I was driving the dirt road, and I finally located a bull in an area I hunted before, and he was probably a half to three quarters of miles up the mountain. And so I went, okay, we got a bull there, and that is a good bull. I could tell by his sound, that's a good bull. So I leave the area. I go all the way back, wait for him to come up, tell him I got a bull located, get a hold of my son, because he wants to go too. And so I say, okay, all three of us are going to go in. And so I go to the spot well before daylight. We get there, I call, nothing. So we drive about a quarter mile. I said, I know he's in this section somewhere. I know they don't go anywhere. I mean, a bull, when you catch them at night, they're in their feeding area. They're going to stay somewhere around there. And I think within a half a mile, I found him. And he was still way the heck up that mountain, maybe even further. And I could barely hear him. But you can hear really good, you know, while it's dark and if there's no weather. It doesn't take much. So we start heading up. He bugled. He answered a location bugle. And so we start heading up, and we probably been going for 35 minutes. It's steep. We hunt a lot of steep country, really thick, a lot of downfall. That's my favorite, to get into those areas nobody wants to go into. So and there was no camp right there. So we're moving up. I hear this bull bugle two more times in that 35 minutes. So I already know that this bull is somewhat advertising himself to an extent, because his bugles weren't like lethargic, lazy. They had some meat behind it, but nothing was answering him. And so I thought, okay, all we're going to mess with this guy is with cow sounds. That's what this guy's looking for. So and this was just last. So we move up, we get closer, we get to where I'm thinking, I mean, we got to be within, 300 yards of him. Let's start. I'm going to start using the cow calls now. So I go ahead and give a couple of very loud cow calls. And just wait. He answers almost instantly. And he's quite a ways up the mountain. So we start trucking toward him. I give him a few more cow calls right after he says something to let him know I heard him. I'm letting him know. And I give rapid ones. This shows a little bit of excitement that the cow is interested in what she heard. So I start making my way up. I mean, we go maybe 150 yards. And this bull has probably bugled 10 times now. So he's really getting excited for this cow. See, you never know until things happen. And so as I could see this, I'm saying, okay, guys, this is going to happen. We just need to find a really good setup, but he's still coming. I can hear each sound he's making. He's closer and we're closer. So this bull's coming. So we definitely got a setup. We don't have to take it right to him. So as we get to, it seems like maybe we're 125 yards apart. Again, John, it's really thick stuff, really thick.
Right.
Get up and there's a little bit of a bench. And I tell my son and the guy says, I said, Paul, help him out, help him out. Because this guy's killed like one bull in his life. I said, help him out. So we get, I see the little bench and I shove him up there. I get about 25 yards behind him, a very low hanging tree, branches everywhere, big tree. I mean, this thing must be almost 3 feet in diameter. It's huge.
Jesus.
And so I get right down to it and I see all these dead branches here, but I'm not doing anything with them. It's just a just in case. It's a really good setup. So I get down there and I start hitting a contact buzz and to excite him and tell him, I want you to come on down here. This is more of a demand, you know, giving him a. And when I do, he just comes unglued. I hear him running. He was probably still maybe 100. You know, it's hard to tell how far away they are at times. They seem closer sometimes to me, but I could hear him running and he is bugling, screaming, and he runs right around. I could see the willows as he's in. We hunt a lot of willow country, a lot of burns. He's coming down through it. I see him at about 60 yards, pieces of him as it's flashing. They're 25 ahead of me. I see him come running all the way around, and he's going to run right toward him. And as he's doing, I'm turning around, calling, just keeping the momentum going. And he is just bugling. This guy, and when I look at him, I go, oh, my God, that's a 310-inch bull. This is a really nice – we're half a mile off a road, dirt road. And this is one of them little spots that just people drive by. They just – don't know it, you know, you can get off these spots. But anyhow, he comes around and I see the guy starting to draw and I see the bull coming and I'm thinking, okay, hopefully he gets close enough. And I see him going 50, 40, 30. He comes around and now I can tell he's inside 20 yards. Guy's at full draw. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to be packing meat off this thing. And it's only half a mile, but I bet you it would have taken us an hour and a half to get out of there with one load. I mean, it's just such crap. You have to see it. It is so much downfall to negotiate. It's a joke, but that's what a lot of the country is that way. But anyhow, I mean, I got this thing cut and wrapped in my mind that this thing, I mean, my son or we would kill that bull's dead. He comes running in, the guy's at full draw, top pin, and I don't know what he does, but he shoots, and I thought he hit the bull. I mean, how can you miss it? You know, I just whack, you know, the whole thing.
Right.
And I'm calling AC. I see the bull turn and run, and I see him run up the hill, and I can just see his horns, and I'm just screaming a bugle now. Just really hammering, and he's just standing there. All of a sudden, he stops, and he starts walking away, and I'm thinking, oh, they got him, you know. And I was hoping maybe he'd get a second arrow in him. So I start walking up there, and they're shaking their heads left and right. And I'm like, what? What? As I get up there, the guy says, I don't know what I did, but I shot at least 6 to 7 inches past him to the left. Didn't touch anything. I just missed him completely. So you know how far he pulled the shot off? that's what they do sometimes, though. He was so excited. This guy's hunted elk for 14 years, and he put his pin on him, he said, and what, you know, my only thing I could think of, he said he was just zoned out. He was just shaking like a leaf. As I think he pulled his left hand, his bow arm, to see where that arrow was going to go. Guys do it all the time. They get so excited. They want to see where it hits. Well, right. He saw it all right. Went right by the bull. Never even touched him. But it ended up being we walked at 17 steps to where the bull stood. And he was a beautiful bull, too, for over the counter. But, you know, just giving you an example, here's how we called that bull without a bull sound because of the way the bull was reacting. We didn't end up getting halfway or two-thirds of the way and decide, we got to throw bull sounds at him now. No, this wasn't the kind of bull that was necessary. Right. You see, if something changed where, uh-oh, I got to make something happen now. Like he hung up at 50, 60 yards, and he's just screaming for the cow. Now I might introduce some raking, just scream at the bull and let him know why that cow's not coming. You see, now I might have to do it because he's forced my hand. But outside of that, don't think you have to throw bugles out every time you cow call or vice versa. You know, just because you watch it on YouTube. I mean, that's where guys go wrong. Because we're not all working the same elk. So many of these guys that are doing the videos, you know, like I referred to dumb elk, that's what they're hunting these days. You know, some are over the counter, most aren't, but they're hunting elk that don't see a lot of human interference. And those are the elk that are more susceptible to come into any kind of calling. They just come in because of the fact that most of the time, any elk sound they hear, there's an elk behind it. But these elk, Most of the time it's a human. There's something, a threat behind it. So you really got to be persistent in your calling, and you better be extremely believable. And we had a lot of cases like that this year, actually, where these bulls just came flying right in on top of us. And all of them are within a mile, I would say. Yeah. And I mean, it's just the fact that you find out where these elk are, you listen to them, know what makes them tick for that particular circumstance, and apply a strategy that's going to work for him as an individual, right, not as one shoe fits all. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. Awesome, man. Well, we got through a few of them. I'm going to end this episode here, and we'll have you back on, and we'll go through some of these other scenarios, and
you bet.
And get that information. All right.
Yeah, you know, there's something that we can all learn from every little event that we might be involved with, because there's always these little things that you have to tweak and maneuver around to make it work. If we didn't, it would be boring if we could just use the same thing on everything.
Right.
It would not be the challenge that it really is.
Right. It's about recognizing the scenario and saying, oh, I've been here before. Oh, I heard Paul Bedell when he was here before, and this is what he did, you know, that kind of scenario. And what's the saying? A smart man learns from his mistakes, but a wise man learns from the mistakes of others. And if you're good about listening and picking up on these stories, that's why I like the stories thing. You know, if you listen to the whole scenario and you're really good about painting the picture,
thanks.
And you see that picture is unfolding, and that scenario is unfolding in front of you. If you could recall, you know, the what you did and start applying those things, you know, your chances are going up of getting one go start going up. So
yeah, you know, understanding those sounds, it's just so key. Do you remember just real quick, where I told you the story, I think I told it to you, where we had killed that really nice bull, and then I went and grabbed my pack, and I was coming back, and the cows were trying to call the bull back to him, and they were,
yes.
They sat there for like 15 minutes calling, and that one kept giving the contact buzz just periodically, you know, wanting that bull to come right back up to him. And they were only 60 yards from us, but it was so thick we couldn't see him. And eventually, right, another bull came in behind them and bugled, and they went running up to him. I mean, you know, just listening to the sounds that they were making, it just cements in your mind how important they are to use as hunters toward the elk themselves. These things are money when used the right sound at the right time. But we'll let it go at that.
Oh, that's perfect. That was a great story. I always think about that story, actually.
I'm telling you, it just really helps to cement these sounds and these ideas in your head to know that they work on elk. You just have to know how to make them and when to use them. You just don't use them randomly out there. You know, everything's timing.
Right. For sure. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And like I said, we'll get you back on here to finish up some of these scenarios, and we'll add to the What Would Paul Do series, and and go from there.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
All right. You bet, John. Anytime.
All right.
All right. Bye now.